Buggerty.
Hey, Ben Lawrence. How's it going?
Good. Hey, sound check. How are your batteries?
My batteries, I just took them out of the charger. They are absolutely full.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I found a good place. The batteries were plugged in into the kitchen in an outlet that shares like a couple of different, like the toaster and the microwave are there. You notice how in your house, there are some plugs that just you never unplug. Like for us, it's the ice machine and the microwave. Anything with a clock on it.
A lot of things in like the kitchen often do not get unplugged.
Right. And so the toaster and the charger were sharing a plug. But I have moved the charger into the room. We've got a plug-in like right next to the door. And there's a very small footprint for the batteries. So that's where they are now.
So I think we found a new segment. Before every show, I'm going to ask you how your batteries are doing.
Battery check. 100% full up.
All righty. Sounds good.
Which is good.
Yeah, let's get on with the show.
Yes. So, let's see. I have done nothing today. But I've been watching Steven Universe and eating candy.
Now, what are you, 12?
I haven't eaten candy in a really long time. Candy's great. I love it. It's super.
Weren't you off of sugar for a while?
Yeah, I did. I wasn't eating sugar at all. So this is a new thing. But right before, you might remember, I texted you and said, I'll be there in a sec. Yeah. I was brushing my teeth. Because this is my idea that brushing teeth is important.
You won't get any disagreement from me.
Yeah. So how are things?
As are regular visits to your dentist.
Oh yes, of course.
Because you know you can brush all you want, but if there's an issue, brushing
you're
won't
not going to know
it.
About it. Yeah, exactly.
No.
So I have news.
What's your news?
I was at Aldi. Are you familiar with Aldi? They have Aldi's?
No.
At all?
No.
Where you're at? Okay, Aldi is like, it's similar to Trader Joe's. The two franchises, Trader Joe's and Aldi, are owned by brothers. But Aldi is like, if a Trader Joe's and a grocery outlet were to merge, kind of. So it's a discount food store. You're going there because you're not going to pay as much.
So it's like a regular grocery store.
Sort of, except that the brands in the store are off brand. They aren't Aldi brand. They're like. So for instance, you might get something called Millville Toastios, which are Cheerios, but they aren't.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Or Mr. Popper Soda.
Exactly. Yes. Dr. Fizz or something to that effect.
Or Pepsi.
So, but what the other thing that they do is they sell non-food items as well, like interesting different packaging things. For instance, I'm wearing a pair of sleep shorts that they were selling. But the other thing that I got was a wearable sleeping bag.
A wearable sleeping bag. So does this sleeping bag have arms and legs?
Yes, it is a cross between a jumpsuit and a sleeping bag. It's basically snow pants that you wear to bed. As far as I can tell, and it's awesome. But I encourage you to go to my Twitter feed whenever we get done here and take a look at the media section and take a look at the pictures, because one of the reasons that I bought it was specifically because the model that they used for the packaging has more attitude than I've ever seen a model for packaging of a clothing
or
outdoor item.
They're wearing a wearable sleeping bag, so you got to have some attitude for that. When you first told me that it was a wearable sleeping bag, I immediately had this image of like what a hot dog would look like if it had arms and legs.
Oh, yeah. No, it's much more human form factor than that. But it's...
So it's a big, thick bodysuit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Big, thick bodysuit, basically.
Is it one piece?
It is... It is not one piece. It's sort of one piece, but it has removable hands and feet.
When I was a kid, I often just slept in sleeping bags because I felt that that was a lot easier to maintain than making my bed every day.
Hey, and, man, I gotta say, I'm 45 years old. That's exactly what I do.
And I wore out the end of the one sleeping bag I used, so my feet could stick mm-hmm. through. Which basically, I would walk around the house with the sleeping bag. So I'm way ahead of you, Paul. I've been wearing sleeping bags for
That's all I'm
40
saying.
Years.
It's going well. I'm looking forward to trying it out. Let's see what else. Betty went to a Twilight camp. I made a joke. That she's going to see a lot of sparkly vampires.
Yeah, but, that's where my mind went. What's a Twilight Camp?
Twilight Camp is a camp where you go there at 6 p.m. and come home. You get picked up by your parents at 9 p.m. So it's
literally just a camp during twilight.
Exactly, and right, it's also good. Very inconvenient.
How far away from it from it, you are?
Well, that's the thing. It's this is the reason I was saying it was inconvenient. It's a half hour there and a half hour back.
Yeah,
but there's also it's a camp, so there's not really anything around. So either you drive there for a half hour, wait there for 3 hours, and then drive back.
Right.
Or you do what I did every night, which is you drive there, you drive back.
You drive there again.
And
then
you drive there and you drive back again after spending a full 2 hours at your house.
Right.
It worked out all right. And I think she had fun. It was a Harry Potter camp. Now, Betty had taken the Pottermore quiz to find out which house she was in. All got Ravenclaw.
Is that a requirement for going to this Harry Potter camp?
This is the thing. It's not. When she went to that camp, she was Slytherin. And I was a little bit surprised. But it's funny because she kind of worked it a little bit. I was like, did you have fun? And she was like, I never have fun. I was like, oh no. And then I was like, oh, she's doing a thing. And then I was like, is she doing a thing? Yeah, it's hard to tell sometimes. But the big thing is that I was like, wow, how did they figure out the sorting? And then I realized, because she mentioned it, almost everybody who's in Slytherin was older. Almost all the ones who were in Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw were younger. And I couldn't figure out why, so I asked one of the instructors, you know, is it just to make it faster to sort people and all that? No, it's because they play Quidditch. And at one point in time, they were sorting them just where they wanted to go.
Yeah.
And then the younger players were just getting creamed on the Quidditch court. So
the houses play against themselves? They don't play against the other houses?
Oh, no, no, no. That's the thing, is that before, the houses would play each other. And, like, if it so happened that, you know, one house was a lot older than the other one, like, much more older kids, they would just go. So what happens is all the older kids get either Slytherin or Gryffindor. All the younger kids get Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw.
Oh, and then, only those two houses play each other.
Exactly, that's right.
Gotcha. I took one of those
tests.
Oh,
and the full exchange. Oh, sorry. This is just because it's important. I forgot. It was they had played Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw. I mean, sorry, Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw played. Gryffindor and Slytherin played. And Betty, who is a Slytherin, said, and we beat them very easily, which was, you know, again, a Slytherin thing. That's when I said, did you have fun? And she said, I never. So it was two birds with one stone.
kind of haughty at beating the Gryffindors, but then also not having any fun. I'm sorry, I steamrolled you on that, Ben. In retrospect, I wouldn't have, but there you go. That's the story.
I had to do a book report on Harry Potter for Spin the Bottle.
Oh, yes.
And I took a bunch of online tests. I didn't take the Pottermore one, which is like the official one, because you had to you had to register, and I didn't want to do that. But I took a bunch of other ones, and probably about six or seven that I found.
Yeah.
And it was all over the place. I was answering basically all the questions the way I would answer them. I wasn't trying to throw the game. But it was, I got so many different answers. I got sorted into each house.
Ah, on different places, though. Like, in one quiz,
you got
sorted. Yeah,
different platforms. Like, on this website, I was a Slytherin. On this website, I was a Gryffindor, and you know, so on and so forth. There was one website that I thought was kind of funny. It was, I didn't realize this when I was taking the test, but it turned out to be a dating site. And so when I answered all the questions, it was like, and now you have to pay to find out what your house is and get matched up with like-minded people.
Oh, no.
So I'm
right.
X out of that.
The one thing that I find really interesting is now that all this Facebook stuff has come out.
Yeah.
The fact that the online quizzes that you're taking to find out which house you're in or whatever. I mean, some of them are pretty, you know, like, if I could do anything, I would read a book, talk with snakes, eat a lot of food, save a friend. You know, you know which ones. But some of them are actually really close to, you know, regular psychological tests. And now that I know that they've been selling data on people about that kind of stuff, it's actually interesting that they might be able to, just from online quizzes, build a pretty convincing psychological profile of people.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many of those quizzes were you know, innocent quizzes that where the data was just leaked, or which quizzes were intentionally created to data mine.
Now, you remember when I got off of Facebook a while back.
Right.
I don't remember if you... one of the things about it was that I went into my privacy settings and I looked, and a lot of quizzes that I was taking and stuff like that still were connected to my Facebook. Like, they could still view my stuff and all that kind of thing. So I really do think that if I were an intelligence gathering organization, that is probably how I would, you know, go about doing that. Make a fun online quiz. Which character from Blake 7 are you? Or whatever, you know, find out the stuff that the intelligence gathering community from foreign countries, like, what do they watch? And then you make your quiz based on that.
I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and this is speaking of how companies get info on you. He was walking around downtown, and on the phone, he was like on hold with somebody.
And this is downtown Seattle.
He was on the phone. He was on hold with somebody, and he stopped in front of like a clothing store. I think it was like Men's Warehouse or something. And he'd never been in there. He'd never like shopped online for them. He'd never, never told his phone or his online profile that he shops at the Men's Warehouse. And I'm making up the Men's Warehouse because it was the first like clothing store that came into mind.
Of course, sure.
Didn't search for it on his phone. So stopped, considered buying something. He like wanted a vest or something. So thought about it and then left. Didn't even go in. Yes. That night, he received a Men's Warehouse ad that was served up. I can't remember what platform he was on. So he's like, is that weird? Is that just a crazy coincidence? I'm like, well, it could be a crazy coincidence. Or, you know, when you were on hold, did you say something about, oh, I might come in here at some point? Or I might, oh, we are Men's Warehouse. I didn't know this was here.
Oh, can I do you one a little bit more paranoid?
Well, there might be. I mean, I'm thinking it was also, like, location tracking.
Yeah,
and
Google
it was
Maps.
Also, Yeah, and it was like they, whomever was listening, noticed that he stopped for a while in front of that store.
Right, and I'm going to say nobody, I mean, people may not even been listening. The phone itself
yeah.
might have just registered that they stopped in front of the store for a long period of time, and then also that there were no purchases made. Like, right. I'm sure you've seen this before. You go to check out. And then you leave an item in your shopping cart, and you're like, ah, I guess I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And then you get an email that says, hey, we noticed that you stopped by the store. Did you forget to buy the thing that was in your shopping cart? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's often one of these crazy, like, life tips that you see online every once in a while. If you want a deal on something, like, go and put it in your shopping cart online and leave it there. And within a day or two, you'll get an email saying, hey, you know, we noticed you, this is in your shopping cart, but you didn't buy it. Here's 10% off to, you know,
yeah,
help you decide on your purchase.
I had that happen to me, but the fact is I had already bought it somewhere else at that time. So, oh, hey, Ben, by the way, just want to let you know, PSVR bundle, Skyrim is only $250 right now. Not saying that you have to do it. I'm just saying if anybody... I don't think it's going to be still on by the time this airs, but it might. And you should take a look at it because Sony is putting their stuff on sale. And it's fun. It's the next...
I've never played Skyrim.
The next Frontier.
That's the one where the guy took a arrow to the knee, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Oh, man.
So I know about it, but I've never played it before.
I shoot people with arrows all the time. It's awesome. I play a guy named Glum Pineshade, and he is an assassin.
I don't play video games. My power went out at my apartment,
oh, no.
Which is like the first time my power has ever... I was at work, but you know, I got home and my alarm clock is flashing 12, so you know, it's a telltale sign. First time the power has ever gone out in my apartment. And I almost guarantee you it was because of the construction next door. They're building a 40-story high-rise, like, right next to my building. So they have to shut off our water pretty much, you know, every once in a while because they have to, like, tap into the mains or something.
Sure.
So it's annoying. But, yeah, first time the power's ever gone out. And when the power goes out on the Nintendo Wii, it has a little red light on it, like the power light. Those, like, when it's on, it's green. When it's off, it's orange. And when it's red, it means that it can't find a Wi-Fi network.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, if I ever turn it on, it'll find my Wi-Fi and everything will be hunky-dory and the light will stay orange. But it's been a month now and the light is still red, which means I haven't turned on my Wii. Which I think, you know, let's say, you know, a lot of people are like, well, it's a Nintendo Wii. Why would you turn it on? I think it says more towards my casual playing than it does to the actual device or console that I have.
Sure. I mean, if you have it, here's the thing. I mean, I could have an Atari, you know, the joystick that has all the games inside of it or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And depending on, you know, what's going on or that, if I'm bored, I might play that instead of, you know, the newest thing. Until I got the PSVR, Ben, then ruined me for other video games. I've mentioned that before. It's a totally different experience. That being said, if I didn't have it around and I did have the joystick thing, or even, you know, an old handheld football game from 1980. Did you ever see those? The handheld
electronic
football games?
Yeah, I had. No, I didn't have. I played those when I was a kid. I didn't have them. My friends had them, but...
I mean, it's one of those things that I mean, it's... You could still play it. You could still have fun with it, even though it's, you know, old. Or whatever. So that's kind of cool. I like the fact that we can be interested in that sort of thing. There's this sort of apocalypse fetish. The idea that, people...
In video
often
games?
With technology, like, it's sort of like how people would sometimes say, that they wish their house would burn down so they could just start over without all the junk in it.
Okay, I haven't heard anybody say that, but okay.
I've heard people say also that they would like it if the internet would just go away.
Right.
And they could go back to where it was just BBSs or whatever. That's the thing, is I think people would adapt, you know, if that were indeed the case. But I don't know exactly, now that we've had it, now that we've had the internet, and we understand how it works and all that, would it really be that big of a, that, I mean, you can't unring the bell, you know, we know what it's like now.
Right.
Would we find a way to bring it back because we couldn't actually live without it? Or would we get used to it? I don't know for sure.
Well, it all depends on the reasons for it going away.
Yeah, true.
I mean, the internet's not just going to turn off, but if say, the internet is outlawed, or if it's tightly controlled, and therefore, like, everybody's priced out of the internet.
Like only rich people. I think we might have mentioned this already. The idea that what if only rich people could have Google? would the dumb masses see them as intellectual elites, or would we just not believe them?
I think again, going back to not, you know, you can't unring the bell. I think it would all depend on whether or not the dumb masses knew about Google.
Oh no! I'm talking about, like, let's say it happens within the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Within the next 2 years, only the rich people have Google.
No, it's
would
not.
Would we believe them?
Believe them?
Yeah, if they have it and they say, well, we looked it up and it's actually this.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
would
yeah,
we
yeah.
believe them when they tell us that?
Well, I guess it depends on what information you're looking at. There are still encyclopedias.
Yeah, true.
Those still exist.
I've
never seen the movie Idiocracy, but I hear people say that that's kind of where they feel that's where society is headed already. Have you seen that movie?
I have seen it. It's actually, I recommend it.
Was the internet a thing when that movie came out?
I don't remember it well enough to tell you one way or the other.
Yeah.
People were watching TV in it. I know for sure. I think it's more TV than internet,
right,
if I remember correctly.
Well, although, TV rocks
you remember
your brain.
Max Headroom, right?
Yeah, of course. Matt Frewer.
That was one of the things I just remembered recently. The idea that having an off switch can get you put in prison. During one of the episodes, they mentioned it.
I don't remember,
like,
TVs
that
specifically.
The TVs are just on all the time.
Right.
And you can't turn them off. People put blankets over them whenever it's time for them to go to sleep and stuff.
Well, because the networks are the ones are in charge.
Yeah, exactly. Now, of course, again, it's one of those things where I would say that we probably, using Google, Twitter, all that kind of stuff, see more ads now than we did during commercials and stuff like that. But the difference is that they don't break up the narrative as much.
In many cases, it is more seamlessly integrated into the narrative. It's like product placement when you're, you know, instead of like watching an episode of Friends and Joey, there's a close-up of Joey taking a big drink of Coca-Cola. You scroll through your Twitter feed, and in amongst all of the posts from the people you follow is a sponsored post by Papa John's Pizzeria or something.
Yeah. This is kind of interesting, because when you were saying that, I was thinking of this idea that there's an hour-long action show, and the hour-long action show is called Coca-Cola. And it takes place in a world where everybody drinks Coke and they're constantly drinking it, but you have actual stars in it and whatever. The thing that's interesting about this is that when I was thinking of it, this thing called Coca-Cola, you said Matt LeBlanc drinking a Coca-Cola. So you and I, when talking about product placement, both thought of Coke immediately.
Well, and see, that is, I think, the epitome of what those marketers want.
Yes.
Because their now, product immediately question. Came to our mind.
When was the last time that you actually bought Coke?
I cannot tell you. I do not buy soda.
Me neither. I don't drink it either.
Yeah.
So you know, are they using, you know, are they using their money the best way they can?
Remember
that's a
when the Cola Wars were like the worst thing that we felt was on TV?
And what's his head? The guy from Negative Land that we saw talk about.
Yeah, I don't remember his name.
Because they have an album called Dyspepsia.
Yeah.
Where they're making fun of Pepsi, and it's great. But the thing is that one of the deals that they wrote is they wrote proposals to both Coca-Cola and Pepsi saying, stop advertising for 1 month and just take that money and, you know, send 50 kids to college.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And of course, nobody did it.
And I guarantee you that your revenue will not drop at all.
But Drake did a video where he used the money from the video to do like Make-A-Wish type stuff for people. So that's the closest thing that anybody's come to it, as far as I know.
I think, I can't remember who it was, but some stand-up comedian was talking about the Cola War. So this might have been back in the late 80s, early 90s or something. And he's like, you know, Coke and Pepsi spend millions, possibly billions of dollars on advertising. So you will buy their product over the other one. And what does it come down to? When you're in a restaurant, you ask for a Coke and the waitress says, is Pepsi okay? And you're like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, and the reason, and so there's that thing, right? You've got marketing for the people's minds, right? But then you also have distribution routes and things like that.
Yeah.
And deals. So it's really kind of interesting how the landscape is carved up and how it's carved up for what?
There's a...
Caffeinated beverages, Ben. Like I said...
Flavored...
It'd be really...
Flavored water, I think, is what Steve Jobs said to the VP of Pepsi when he... had him come work at Apple. Do you want to change the world, or do you want to sell flavored water to kids?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I still like that. I think I mentioned this before. The Sean Connery ad. It's not an ad. Sorry, it's a letter that he wrote to Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs said that he could really, you know, he wanted to collaborate with him and all that.
And Connery Sean wanted Connery's, to collaborate with, or Jobs wanted
no,
to collaborate
no,
with Connery?
No, Jobs wanted Sean Connery to do something with, you know,
oh, okay.
Advertise like Apple the Apple commercial. Or yeah. Whatever. And he wrote him this letter that says, like, you're a salesman. There's nothing I can do with you. There's no reason why I would want to do anything to you. It's a really great letter in retrospect, right?
But at the time, it just sounds like Sean Connery being a jerk.
Well, and it is Sean Connery being a jerk, but now that we know that he's a jerk already, it's a pretty good... Yeah. Oh, hey, speaking about being a jerk, I want to apologize to you, because the thing with... and we're getting into corrections almost, but the text back-and-forth conversation that I had with you about that whole thing... maybe didn't go into the greatest amount of detail about what I was going to talk to in the show. So,
you're going to have to catch me up. What are you talking about?
All right. So, Jennifer.
Oh, that's...
Jennifer Fact Checker, the fact checker that we have for corrections. When I mentioned the thing about her being credited in the show notes.
Yeah.
And things like that. Did we talk about it in personal, or did we only talk about it over text?
No, that was only text. Are you talking about how she was not in the show notes for the last episode?
Oh, was she not in the show notes?
We didn't do corrections last episode. There were no corrections.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, well, that would explain it. But no, I didn't. No, I didn't check. What it was about was, I don't know how much I prepped you for talking about it in the last episode. And I found a text conversation I had with you about it.
Yeah.
But I did not go into as much detail as I thought I did. And so I didn't know if I actually had called you also, or if I just, one of those situations where I had a bigger conversation in my head.
You had a bigger conversation in your head, because the text exchange we had was all there was.
So I apologize to you, and I apologize to Jennifer, both of you, for doing that thing that I do sometimes. I think everybody's cool. I like everybody. But here's the deal for those of you who have no idea what we're talking about. This show. This is where I know why I'm talking about this now. I completely forgot until now. There was a guy who I follow on Twitter, and I think you were here for it too, but I'm not positive. When he was like, "Hey, listen, if somebody mentions a film or TV show or a book on a podcast and you haven't read it, you don't have to tell people that you haven't read it."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, he wasn't talking to me specifically. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like this guy. He wasn't talking to me specifically, but I took umbrage because I'm like, hey, I always mention that I've never read or seen whatever it is we were talking about. But in his defense, he was talking about podcasts where people are supposed to know what they're talking about. And in our defense, you and I are never supposed to know what we're talking about.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
And so my wife, Jennifer Pratt, also known on the show as Jennifer Fact Checker, I'm going to make that a thing, listens to a lot of murder TV and murder podcasts. And one of the problems she has with a lot of the murder podcasts is that the people who are talking about the murders, like, don't know important parts about the murders.
I'm assuming these are, like, solved murders where it's okay if you don't know something about a murder because it's an unsolved murder and those unknown things are still unknown.
Or it's something like that is, maybe they haven't caught the person yet, but like getting the name of the city wrong or not knowing something about the murder weapon, you know, those sorts of things. Things that people following the case would know.
Yeah.
And then I realized how much anybody who knows anything about what we're talking about would get frustrated with us. Which is why we always have this disclaimer. The entire show is built around the idea that you and I are only using the knowledge that we have in our heads.
I would also like to say or point out that we're not, because we're not like a themed podcast, we're not like Unsolved Murders podcast, we're not trying to tell the audience certain things.
Yes.
And we're not trying to inform them while being ill-informed ourselves. Our misinformation that we speak comes out of a natural conversational flow, either as, you know,
yes,
to illustrate something we're talking about or to relate a story. So I think it's, you know, it's not, I don't feel bad. I never feel bad about getting stuff wrong.
Right. You and I never know what we're going to talk about.
Exactly.
We don't talk about it ahead of time. Which
I'm sure a lot of people have posted on Twitter, hey, jerks who do podcasts, have a topic to talk about.
Maybe come up with a theme.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but we do have a theme. Our theme is basically we want to see how much a modern person, how much we can have a conversation, what sort of conversation we can have when we don't look up stuff on Google. How much knowledge do we actually keep in our heads? Turns out not a lot, but occasionally we're correct. And how do we know for sure? It's because our trusty Jennifer Fact Checker listens to our podcast and then tells us what we got wrong.
A thankless job, except we're thanking her now.
job that we are now thanking her for. And she's been doing this for how long, Ben?
I am ever not going to tell you because I do not know.
Ever since we started asking people to write in, basically, with problems, she did...
Oh, actually, I could find out because I just opened up the email and I could see when she started emailing bensemail@yahoo.com@gmail.com.
Oh, yes. And when did she start? Can you tell us?
Well, it's the first correction was episode 62. It looks like, because we did have, like, before then we asked people to send in questions and she sent in questions.
And when did she start sending in questions?
I don't know when she started sending us questions, but the final question that she sent was... this is such a riveting part of the podcast.
Well, what we know now is it took us 62 episodes before we found our theme. That's
August,
number one.
August 18, 2016. You want to hear the questions?
Aha.
Because we already answered these. The questions are, what is the infield fly rule? What is a Saxon and how does it become Anglo? How long should you wait for sunscreen to take effect and how often should you reapply? If you are in a car traveling at an average of 75 miles an hour on the freeway, how long should you wait before you give it into the need to urinate and just pull into a rest area? And number five, where is Perth? So we answered those questions back in probably episode like 61 or something.
Yes, and if you want to hear the answers to that, go listen to that episode, because I'm not going to attempt it and be wrong again this time.
So before we get into questions, you want to give the wrap-up of what these, or continue your lead into the segment?
Oh, sure. So I guess starting around episode 62, we realized, hey, this is what our bit's going to be. We're going to do our best to just not look things up, and then if something is incorrect... we will get corrected, and by far the most tireless and thorough researcher I know of, Jennifer Fact Checker, writes to us and lets us know, hey, what we missed, and sometimes even lets us know if we got something right, which makes me feel all warm and fuzzy whenever we actually pull a true fact out of the ether. So that is something that we like to call corrections.
Ding.
Ding. Hey, we got the ding at the same time.
Not according to me, but maybe according to you.
That's something interesting. Yeah. For me, Ben, those dings, same exact time.
There is, because we have all this great modern technology, but they still can't figure out how to create delay-free phone calls.
We actually get pretty good at it, though, in a way, sometimes.
You know, it's funny, there was a time, there's a couple episodes, that's what I was going to say. So we started corrections on this new like leg of our podcast in episode 62. This is episode 120. So for almost half the time, we've kept to one theme, which if you listen to the first 62 episodes, you would know that is quite a feat because we seem to change what we were talking about.
Yeah.
One point, this was going to be an improvised sci-fi podcast. Another point, just going to be something else.
My favorite is still the improvised underwater sea-based sci-fi podcast. It only happened one time, but I think I didn't tell you we were doing it, and you committed.
You did tell me we were doing it, and I'm like, no, we're not. And then you call up, and you were committed, so I basically had to go along with you.
Oh, man, that's too bad. I thought that I totally sprung it on you. Now I feel bad.
Don't
feel
bad.
But only slightly.
This isn't a show where you need to constantly feel bad about yourself.
No, this is a life where I constantly have to feel bad about myself.
Hey, speaking of feeling bad about ourselves, let's talk about what we got wrong last week.
Yeah, exactly. Correction time.
We were talking about Fatty Arbuckle and how he was accused of murder.
Oh, yes.
And so she says, Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle was tried three times for the sexual assault and manslaughter of Virginia Rappe, and I don't know if I'm saying that right, but her last name is spelled R-A-P-P-E, in 1921. Two hung juries, and the third trial ended with an acquittal. So I did kind of get that right, where I was like, he was accused but not convicted. He worked as a director and screenwriter until his death of a heart attack in 1933 at 46 years old. I'm going to be in San Francisco this summer, and I was looking at, I want to stay in the hotel where Fatty Arbuckle either like got caught or died or something. There's a touristy hotel thing in San Francisco. And because it's a touristy hotel thing, it was super expensive. So I'm like, never mind.
How expensive is super expensive?
It was like $500-$600 a night.
Oh, wow. That is super expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never stay in a hotel that's more than I can afford. Anyway, let's move on.
Number two, we were talking about what Roseanne said, and she says, there is no way I'm looking at what Roseanne said, wrote, texted, or whatever. So, fair enough. Yeah. All right. We were also talking about kids driving cars, farm kids, being able to drive before everybody else.
Yes.
You said that they can drive. I said it probably just only applies to the farm. She says, kids driving cars. One does not need a license to operate farm machinery. No one needs a license to drive a tractor or a combine.
Hey, all right.
So.
Oh, I knew that already.
We were kind of.
What did I say?
We were both kind of right.
Yeah.
But rural kids.
I was telling. Really quick. I was telling Jennifer a little bit. There is an element of what I call the reading rainbow effect that both you and I do sometimes, where we know something, but we put ourselves in the place of the listener who may not know. And so when we find out, we're like, oh, that's cool. Even though, like I said, you know, my dad has a tractor and he's let my nieces drive it.
Yeah.
And I don't think of him as the kind of guy who like breaks rules.
No.
That often.
And before I had my license, I drove tractors too. And you know, I didn't grow up on a farm, but I'm assuming that some 14-year-old kid who could reach the pedals could probably safely drive the truck from the back 40 to the barn and not get in trouble.
Yeah.
Like if his dad told him or if his mom told him to.
Yeah, or and her plus too. Also just
whatever.
Around those places, not a lot of cops anyway.
Exactly. If your driveway is 5 miles long, it's probably not being patrolled.
Yes.
All right. She says what rural kids can get is something called a hardship license. The standards are way tougher than they used to be, but basically it's for kids in rural areas who have no other options to travel to school, work, or to care for ailing parents. Most states no longer have this available. Rural states, rural or rural? What do you say?
I say rural.
Rural.
Yeah, I know this sounds weird, but it's sort of an in-between from rural and rural.
Yeah.
It's rural route.
We really need to come up with a better word. We need to, as a society, get rid of words that are hard to say. Rural states do not, or sorry, let me start that again. Rural states do still continue to offer it, such as Tennessee, North and South Dakota, Wyoming, West Virginia, blotch of other states. Generally, a person must be at least 14, but Wyoming has granted them to kids as young as 12. Interesting.
Ah.
Hardship licenses have also been repurposed for folks with a DUI. And then she says, just don't get me started on that BS.
Oh, by the way, Betty is 12. So think about it that way.
So here's a thought experiment. If you worked on a farm and you wanted Betty to drive a tractor down the fields, would you let her?
If I was on a farm,
like if you ran a farm.
Yeah,
and you're like,
probably,
I want you to go plow that.
But I feel as though if I was running a farm, she would have had more experience with motorized vehicles than she has right now. Betty as she is right now, no, I wouldn't.
But if Betty grew up on a farm, of course, she'd be different. We'd all be different.
Exactly.
All right. We were talking about your batteries. Oh, because Jennifer Factchecker also did the thankless chat task of listening to an entire show that had terrible audio.
Yes.
And she says, Paul rarely recharges the batteries. I actually, just a few hours ago, told him to recharge the batteries. He had put them in the charger, but didn't plug the charger into an outlet. Is that true, Paul?
Again, I have moved the batteries to the outlet in the room, and it's fine.
We were talking about
now it's good.
We were talking about our last Goody Lawrence show at Spin the Bottle. It was on. Or she says the last Goody Lawrence live show was on Friday, October 2nd, 2014.
Yes,
I knew it was October, and I always get the year wrong. I thought it was 2013, maybe it's 2015, but no, it's 2014.
Wait, coming and she up, said it was October 2nd? 2nd.
Yeah, 10-2.
Which means that...
We're coming up on four years.
So October 2nd is a Friday.
Correct.
October 3rd would be a Saturday. 4th, Sunday. 5th is... So October 6th. Was a Tuesday. It was the first time that I had my job here.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm almost got my 4-year
crazy
anniversary at this job.
3.5.
And if we remember correctly, I've never been at any job for more than 5 years. So see how that goes.
We will see how that goes.
Yeah.
Moving on. She says that you said, what if they're training us to stay inside with screens? And then she just comments on that, and I'll read it because it's in the email. Well, yes. That makes you complicit since you refuse to put your phone down and go outside. Just saying.
Oh, no. I'm, and I want to make it very clear that the fact that I don't want to put my phone down and go outside shows that it's working.
All right, here's another comment on you.
Jesus.
I feel kind of bad, but
No, this is great.
I'm going to read it.
Keep it coming.
She says, "Paul, your version of war is very odd. I guess we were talking about war, and I guess you said that war is for stopping problems because she says war is for stopping problems." So all wars are defensive? No, not even kinda. Not even just since you've been alive, just no.
Okay, let me explain.
All right. Defend yourself, sir.
Yeah. What I said was that's not what wars actually are. The narrative about that's what wars are. It's different, in my opinion. We say that we are going to war to protect. So, for instance,
right,
like Iraq War, first one, the first Iraq War. Oh, they invaded Kuwait. We got to go and help those folks. Blah blah blah. Right.
Remove the nasty ideas. Dictator.
The idea is always that we are protecting people. We are doing stuff. That has been the narrative. And the thing that I was talking about in the last episode is that we are getting to a point that I think is dangerous where someone could pitch a war to the American people, not with the narrative that we're doing it to protect people as defense, but that we're doing it to just go out and get stuff that we need and people would be okay with it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm concerned about.
I do kind of see that happening. I don't see it happening with our current state of affairs, but let's say that the next great product that everybody has to have is made from an element, a mineral, that can only be found in some desolate third world country in Central Africa.
Mm.
You could be able to, like, you know, for whatever reason, I'm thinking of vibranium, but maybe that's just because I've been thinking about Black Panther. But
yeah,
let's say there's a vibranium-like element in Wakanda, and U.S. is like, all right, well, we use vibranium to make the iPhone 12. Let's go get it.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about even the more importantly, Canada. Right? The idea that they're putting tariff on the steel. And they're putting tariffs on our steel, and that's wrong. And we have this pipeline deal. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to go and set up these oil wells in Canada. And we just do that. And then they say, hey, you can't put your oil wells here. We're like, well, what are you going to do? And then, you know,
yeah.
A fight happens. That sort of thing, right? As a precursor to, you know, then all of a sudden we say, hey, look where, and we're going with what you're saying, right?
Yeah. And then
we don't need to go, we could just go here and get this stuff. And people are like, yeah, they owe us for whatever. The point, and just getting back to the correction, I'm noting that this is, in my opinion, incorrect. What do we call the group that makes the wars right now? What is it called? What is the term that we use for that part of our government?
The military?
Yeah. The civilian side of it. What do we call it?
The civilian side of the military.
Yeah. Or the political side of it.
You're talking about the government?
The Department of what? What do we call it?
Defense.
This is my point. not that that's why wars are fought, but that is the narrative that we use for it.
Yeah, and oddly enough, that started like after World War II. Jennifer will have to tell me when, but it was called the War Department.
Yes. This is my entire point.
Yeah.
Not why it's actually used, but the framing that we use when we talk about it. Yeah. And what I'm saying
All right. You've proved yourself, Mr. Goody.
My point is that I fear that that is going to go away sometime within our lifetime.
the subterfuge, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Obfuscation.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. So.
Anyway. There's one final correction.
Yes.
We were talking about Elmer's glue because I think we had mentioned that Betty was constantly putting it on her hands and letting it dry and peeling it off. We all did that. We think that's fun to do. And I can't remember if I was the one who mentioned this or you were, but she says one cannot get high from huffing Elmer's glue.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if I thought you could get high.
I made the statement that you could not. That's one of the reasons why it was good for kids in schools.
It's non-toxic. You can eat it if you want.
Hey,
we get bottles of it back from school with all of Betty's other unused school supplies. There is no glue budget.
Yes.
And that is it. She says, keep it wrong, guys. XO Jennifer
Keep
Fact
it
Checker.
Wrong. Thank you to Jennifer Fact Checker for checking our facts. All right. So
obfuscation?
Something.
This has really been bothering me how I couldn't pronounce it.
Man,
like I said,
I'm not gonna,
outlaw
gonna
hard
it.
Words to pronounce.
So I believe, and I don't know where it is in the podcast, but I remember it enough that I think that I need to mention it. As you know, Anthony Bourdain died.
Yes, he committed suicide in France on Thursday night.
And one of the things that was interesting that came out of this discussion is someone said that committed suicide has an air of judgment to it, and that their preferred term is resorted to suicide, which I could get behind. I think that's a possible thing. But again,
that's also twisting the narrative of suicides as well.
So the big thing, though, is that one thing that came out of it were a whole bunch of, not a whole bunch, but more than I'm comfortable with, of vegan and vegetarian people talking about how he had been mean to them.
What?
When he was alive. And I think that I may have, at one point in time, mentioned on this podcast him being mean to vegans or vegetarians. And so I thought it would be a good enough time to mention it. I don't think it's too soon for the sentiment that I'm going to express. And the sentiment is that I think that someone who is kind and generous and nice to a lot of people, being a complete immovable object, just having a rock solid conviction,
yeah,
on something that you or me, or, you know, whoever he's talking to is diametrically opposed to, is actually useful. And what I mean by that is this. If, let's say, 80% of the people that someone comes into contact with, say he's great, and he's wonderful, and they love him, and 20% are like, that guy has always been a jerk, because he doesn't like this thing that I do.
Yeah.
I think that's a very useful type of person to have in the world, because having someone who doesn't agree with you on something, someone who will never agree with you on something, is very instructional, I feel. Especially if they're beloved by everyone.
Well, I don't know.
Or most people.
I don't know what he was like in person. Obviously, never met him. But I have, yeah, you know, and I haven't honestly watched any of his TV shows or read any of his books. I mean, I obviously knew who he was, but I wasn't very familiar with his body of work. But what I have heard in this time that, like, in the past day, when news came out of his passing and all these tributes started coming out, is that he was very, like, one of the words I've heard the most to describe him was honest. And I get that it was probably, like, honest to a fault and to a point of being, like, brusque and rude to people who didn't know him. And to the people who did know him, like, they all, he wasn't like a jerk for the sake of being a jerk. He had a viewpoint on the way the world was and an opinion on it, and said that and spoke his mind. But with, like, on a personal level, and of course this is still the grace period where somebody dies and you never speak ill of the dead, especially the recently deceased. And, you know, he was like, a person I follow on Twitter said, you know, he always looked you directly in the eye when speaking with you. And I think that says a lot, you know, because the person I follow on Twitter is not like a super famous person, right? Anthony Bourdain had no reason to suck up to that dude, you know, but he was always genuine and looked you in the eye when speaking with you and was, you know, otherwise a pleasant person. But when it comes to food or politics or, you know, society, the way he sees things, yeah, he could come off as a jerk.
Well, and that was the other thing that you were saying, you know, people who know him, people who don't know him. I heard some things about people who had met him just once and he had no reason to be nice to them, but he was.
Yeah.
And he was really, so yeah, I think that's the big thing is that we like the person who is brutally honest often. And the only times that we have problems with it is when that laser focus is focused on us.
Yeah.
And then it becomes uncomfortable and weird.
oftentimes there, I mean, I don't know. It depends on how brutally you are honest, you know?
Yes.
There's a time for being, you know, brutally honest. There's a time for, like, being able to express a differing viewpoint in a considerate way.
Yes.
I grew up with my friend group when I was a kid, or not even just my friends, but like kids in general, will express a differing viewpoint, but in a very inconsiderate way. So I had always had this sort of stigma that if I express an opinion on something and it was different than everybody else's, I was wrong.
Yes. I understand that completely.
Yeah.
And so the being
Jesus.
Knowing that there are people who are free to express whatever opinion they have and still be loved by a bunch of people it's good to see, and it's interesting to think about.
Yeah, I get your point, where it's like it's refreshing to have those people in the world, but when it's opposed to your viewpoint, it's not interesting to have those people in the world.
Well, and it still could, though, because, I mean, what it did for me, at least, and I would credit him specifically with this, is it got me thinking about, so this is a thing that I'm doing that I'm saying, you know, is just for me. You know, I'm not giving this rule to anybody else. It's just something that I'm pursuing, right?
Yeah.
And his statements on it made me realize that when it comes to personal rules, right? Again, we can get into like the kosher thing that I was doing, for example.
Yeah.
Because we are social animals, when I say, oh, I'm just doing this for me, I'm not passing judgment on you. You know, we learn by mirroring people. We learn by, you know, that sort of thing. So by me not communing with you in your way, right? Like you've made BLTs for everyone and I'm not eating one. And I say, oh, this isn't a reflection on you. I just choose not to eat this.
Yeah.
Just by that particular action, I am passing a judgment in a way. Because I am doing this as an example. I am exhibiting a behavior that is different from yours. We are not doing things together. I am separating myself. So it was a really interesting thing that made me realize that even just saying, well, I'm fine with whatever you want to do, saying it verbally didn't necessarily make it true in that way. So I don't know. I don't think of myself as being that much of a jerk or anything like that about stuff in that nature. But it did make me think about, like, the other thing that made me, like, not do the whole veganism thing as a strict rule anymore was the idea of, okay, well, what if, for instance, I go to a village somewhere and they say, oh, hey, we're very honored that you're here. And look, we've killed and prepared our prize goat for you.
Yeah.
And there it is, and it's cooked, and there's, you know,
and if you,
all the food and everything.
If you don't eat it, you will dishonor us greatly.
What am I... And they don't even have to say that, you know? What else...
Yeah.
What else could it be? You know, so... So I you know, thank that experience for that thing.
It is interesting when, because a lot of that stuff, food is very connected to people's values, and
yes, indeed.
And you know, I as somebody who you know, basically, I'm not vegan, and I will eat, you know, whatever I think tastes good. If I do go out to have dinner with somebody and they need to get the, you know, they're vegan for like political reasons, not for like health reasons, but for like societal reasons, I do feel judged because I'm like, oh yeah, well, you know, a cow died for my hamburger. And I know, I don't think, you know, intellectually, I know they're not like looking down at me on from on high, but I feel that.
Yeah. Well, it's, and I think the reason is, it's because someone says, well, I'm doing this for moral reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, the implication there is that, you know, the whole concept of morality is that that it's universal, kind of. Like, it should apply to everybody. And people would argue about that, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, but the main thing is that we exist on this planet as people, and it's really great when somebody comes along that a lot of people dig, and that show, you know, that help us learn things about ourselves and show us that we can get along and all that kind of
and
stuff.
And, like, promotes travel and seeing new things and meeting new people and experiencing other cultures.
Getting out of one's comfort zone.
Exactly. A thing that I think both you and I don't often like to do.
And I would agree with that. Well, I would say this. I don't think... I mean, you went to China.
Yeah.
Right? And I went to Nice. And both those things were great. Those are nice experiences. I think that we are content to stay at our homes. I think that if we were given the opportunity to travel more, that we would not necessarily balk at it.
Right.
It's just that we happen to be of a, I don't want to get too political, but of a social class that does not actually get to travel much.
Yeah, money and time. If we had that, then maybe we would be able to travel more. Speaking of traveling, we've gone a little bit over time.
If somebody wants to, true. Say again?
I said we've gone a little overtime.
Oh, yes. The one other thing I was going to say is that if anyone listening would like to sponsor a Goody Lawrence World Tour, we would be amenable to that.
Heck yeah.
Probably. We just have, you know, families and loved ones to support, you know, so...
We'll have our people contact your people. Yes. We'll get that all sorted.
Oh, right. And speaking of loved ones, and also that we went a little overtime. Hey, Betty! Okay, she's going to be here in just a second.
Sorry, I was watching some terrible kids' cartoons.
Oh, no. So, Betty is here, and she has a balloon.
Yeah, I'm learning how to tie balloons.
She's learning how to tie balloons. So Betty, I have a question for you.
What?
Did you know that in some states you would be able to drive a car if you lived on a farm? Right now?
Only on the farm, I think.
I'm not gonna go that far.
I don't think
Betty is contemplating this. If you had to drive our car right now, would you be able to do it? No.
Is she tall enough to reach the pedals?
Yeah, could you reach the pedals?
Maybe.
Are you and Mom the same height now?
Kind of.
Yeah, I think she and Jennifer are actually the same height now.
Oh, really?
So.
Wow.
Yeah. Betty is about 5 feet tall now.
So, yeah, that's tall enough to reach the pedals.
Yeah.
Except on this car my dad had, which is super long.
Okay, I'm going to go back to watching my terrible kids cartoon.
All right, well, we're going to all sign off, actually, so...
I love you guys, see ya.
All right, love you too, Betty, see ya.
All right.
So there we go. Again, Ben, obviously the idea is going to be that at some point in time, when Betty is like, 18 or whatever, we'll be putting out an episode that's just, oh no, we can't do that. I was going to say, putting out an episode that's just talking to Betty clips, but by now there's so many that it would be much more than that.
And if you want to do that, I will send you all the raw files and you can do that.
I have all the raw files.
I get. However, I'm going to make a prediction. I know you're fond of making predictions. Before we sign off, I am going to make a prediction. She is 12 right now.
Yes.
If we are still doing this in 3 years, when she's 15,
yes.
Like between 15 and 16, she's not going to want to do this anymore.
Okay.
I guarantee.
Or else her motivations for doing it are going to be different. Yeah.
Alrighty.
But we'll see.
In that case. Well, hey, Paul, it's been a good talk.
Hey, Ben, it's been a good talk. And you know what, Ben?
What's that, Paul?
I invite you to keep it wrong.
Oh, I implore you, sir, to keep it wrong.
Ben, for the love of all that is holy, keep it wrong.
Okay. I will try to so. We're not going to get into that. I said
wrong with the G at the end of it. Listen to it again. Wrong. It's good. All right, Ben.
Wrong.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
Wrong. Yep. Bye.
Bye.